Hi everyone. I think we got most people here. So I think we might as well sort of kick off. I'm Peter Tripe and I'll be chairing this afternoon session on EV is dead, long live EV. I've got a panel over here which I'll introduce in a moment. But I thought, first of all, a little bit of background to this afternoon's sort of topic. So I'm sure everyone is acutely aware that as from the 1st of July this year, SAM came into effect, and the previous statutory valuation methodology and car capital requirement, was a prescribed component of our current embedded value reporting framework under APIN 107. That SVM methodology has effectively fallen away. It's died. So it obviously leads to the obvious question, what does that mean for EV, given it's a core component? Does EV also die? Or is it like royalty, that it just hands the baton on to its successor? And then, if so, what does its successor look like? The Actuarial Society and specifically the Life Assurance Committee has not been sitting idly by as this date has been approaching. And for it's a good part of 18 months or almost of 2 years that the APN 107 subcommittee of the LAC has been working on amendments to APN 107. I'm sure many of you would have seen a draft version of the standard came out earlier this year, around about March, April, comment from the profession. Those comments have been absorbed, and literally last week, the final updated version of the practice note was approved by the Professional Matters Board. And assuming there isn't a massive riot or anything that happens this week, we hope it will be ratified at Council next week and then become effective at the end of this year. So the timing of the convention this year is absolutely perfect. In terms of bringing a session like this to go through some of the key changes that are part of the practice note and also a bit of a discussion about those changes. Because unlike some of the changes that have been made in the past, it's not like a case of just replacing one valuation and capital framework with another. The updated practice note opens the door to producers of embedded value reporting to use a value metric that they feel is most appropriate. So there are a number of factors to sort of take into account in what route you're going to sort of go updating for the new practice note. And then once you've sort of bedded down for SAM, obviously another sort of question on most people's minds is we've got IFRS 17 coming down the tracks. So even if EV might dodge a bullet this time around, with the implementation of IFRS 17 in a couple of years, with its perspective from a shareholder perspective, what do we think of the future of EV post IFRS 17? And we also sort of cover some considerations around that. So to address some of these sort of meaty questions, I've got a panel here with a diverse range of perspectives of embedded value reporting. So like good actuaries, they're all actually quite well practiced in wearing different hats, different roles within their organizations and within the profession. But this afternoon, the hats that I'm looking to, they actually range from the theoretical sort of standard setter through to representatives of the users, the investors actually use embedded value reporting. So without further ado, I'll introduce our orchestra. So as I mentioned myself, I'll be conducting them. Peter Tripe, I'm currently Deputy Chairman of the Life Assurance Committee and been doing embedded value reporting for about 20 years. Next up, we've got our thinker, the theoretician, Gert van den Berg. Gert has been Chairman of the APN 107 Committee for longer than I can remember. He's had senior roles at Sanlam for even longer than that. So he's probably the mastermind behind a lot of these changes, so blame him. Next up, we have a representative of the DUA community. We've got Rian van Rienen, who is responsible for first-line actuarial reporting at Discovery Life. So Rian has a lot of experience interpreting standards and getting the numbers out and engaging with the users of those numbers. And Rion has been at Discovery for close to 20 years, I think. Moving on, in the food chain of financial reporting, we've got Vivek Mudli, who is currently an associate director at Deloitte, but until recently was a CFO at Metropolitan Life, a subsidiary of MMI. And from his perspective that I want to pick his brain is as a receiver of the numbers and having to package and present to the market, you know, what are some of his perspectives. And then certainly last, but definitely not least, clients are always right, so that's why I got the halo there. We've got a representative of the investor community, Musimil Lwandla, is an investment analyst with Standard Bank Securities, covering the insurance sector. Before that, he was a credit risk analyst at ABSA and FNB. And he also has a fearsome academic reputation.
But obviously there were some delays in terms of, you know, when the SAM go live date, actually, the final SAM go live date. But so in terms of the key changes, in terms of the key changes, obviously a lot of the changes to the practice note was driven by the introduction of SAM and then the SVM valuation that fell away. And I'll deal with this in more detail in the next couple of slides. Obviously, there were also some related aspects that we had to address, the contact boundary concepts, which wasn't really part of the embedded value guidance before, as well as the concept of using the SAM risk margin as a cost of capital. Together with that, we also had a long list of to-dos, smaller items that came through as comments from previous rounds that we addressed, and I'll just briefly touch on those at the end. So what are the key changes? So first of all, the old guidance note had a paragraph that explicitly referred to the SVM method, and we've deleted that entire paragraph and replaced it with a new paragraph that sort of acknowledges that although the regulatory liability metrics have been the norm, this is no longer a requirement in terms of the embedded value calculation, and other methods may also be used. Similarly, we also removed references to statutory and replaced it with more generic terms like policy reserves and so on. And then finally, we also dealt with the fact that cross-border work or embedded values calculated in other territories might not actually be based on the SVM. So it's much more generic. It allows more scope in terms of the liability metric. However, together with that, we've also replaced the required capital definition. So previously it was based on CAR, and that inevitably led to some kind of multiple of CAR being used. In that equivalent paragraph in the new practice note, we've removed the references to CAR and rather focused on meeting objectives. So whilst this has sort of always been the intention of the guidance note to consider other dimensions, this hasn't been that explicit in previous versions. So we've actually added more explicitly, you know, consideration of all dimensions, including your regulatory solvency position. So that would include things like liquidity and IFRS equity. We had to just emphasize the fact that although you can consider all of these multiple dimensions, it will always be there is a reminder that you always have to allow for at least meeting the minimum solvency requirements. Given that we've allowed more flexibility in terms of the liability metric and the capital framework, it's important that these two actually have to be aligned. So your choice of liability metric will have to be aligned with your choice of capital metric. So in terms of the contract boundaries, now this is something that, like I said earlier, wasn't really explicitly in the previous versions of the guidance notes, but with the introduction of Solvency II and SAM, and now IFRS 17, the contract boundary concept has really been formalized, and we specifically deal with the differences between the definition of contract boundaries under those frameworks like IFRS and SAM, and embedded values, where the focus is more on economic value. We've also, this was a key topic of discussion in drafting the note. It was whether the SAM risk margin could be used as a cost of capital. Now, the committee said that it could be. However, there are many other factors to consider if you want to make it work. So if you really want to consider using the SAM risk margin as a cost of capital, you need to consider a number of things around, for example, the risk margin percentage and contract boundaries. Then lastly, just in terms of the sort of the smaller items, we've made some changes in terms of the value of new business definition and whether you can use opening or closing assumptions. We found that some companies are using opening assumptions for management information purposes. So we've allowed sort of more flexibility there, but added some disclosure requirements to get the consistency again between the reported results. One specific area that I think the previous versions did not really address was the smaller companies or startup companies that might not have actually achieved sufficient scale. So we've allowed for some allowance in your unit costs and also for minimum capital requirements that might be rather large for a startup business. We've also addressed intangibles, which is quite an important concept. With the freedom around the liability metric and the capital metric, the key is to actually model or to project how cash flows will become available to shareholders. So intangibles is a very important consideration in all of that. Of course, like previous versions of the note, MCEV is also allowed for, and there's a accompanying note that sets out sort of the key factors to consider from a South African perspective when following the MCEV principles. Lastly, we also made some changes to disclosure requirements. We've added sort of a paragraph to encourage the sign-off by directors, and also I made some changes in the disclosures around sensitivity, specifically to allow companies to distinguish between the impact on the adjusted net worth and the VIF, which many companies have combined in the past, mostly due to computational challenges. So those are the main changes or the key changes in the revised notes. Hopefully it will be approved next week and then will be effective from the end of this year. So I'm now going to hand back to Pete.
Thanks, Gert. I thought maybe before we get on to the panels of question, it might just be useful to illustrate an example of where some of the issues, if one moves to a SAM sort of framework, can give issues. And then also, one of the points that sort of comes out from opening the door to, allowing for, well, ensuring that you consider the all of the constraints on your required capital of the company. Don't worry, I'll step through this in a little bit of detail just to explain it. So starting from the left, we've got under the current SVM sort of basis, we've got an example company. It's got a whole bunch of tangible assets sitting over here. It's also got as its core best estimate best estimate liabilities, which are positive, and it's got various compulsory and discretionary margins adding up here. And of course, in the current EV basis, those margins are going to get released as part of your BIF. Then sitting on top of it, you've got some kind of required capital, which is typically driven from a car perspective, some multiple of car typically. And off that, you've got some cost of capital as a deduction, and then you've got some free surplus. So now, if we consider that same sort of company on a SAM sort of basis, it's also got best estimate liabilities. They may or may not be the same. They're probably sort of similar to the underlying best estimates on SVM. There are a number of differences, but that's not the main point. Then sort of sitting on top of that, you've got a risk margin, and you might also have a required capital that's a function of SCR. You know, and in this example, it's actually very similar to SVM, and you might be quite comfortable, to using your SAM sort of basis as the basis, for your embedded value reporting. I mean, some of the implications might be your VIF, to the extent that, risk margins, are substantially less than the margins you have on your current basis. Yes, that might sort of go down, but fundamentally, it's a sort of a shifting of between buckets within your embedded value. But where things get a little bit more interesting is where you have, for example, a company like this, which has overall fundamentally sort of negative liabilities, and then even once you've sort of add the risk margin and some multiple of SCR, you're still ending up, with a negative. And then it sort of raises sort of questions around, what does that mean? Does that mean, with free surplus going all the way down to zero or even some negative, can I actually pay everything out? What does it mean to actually then pay out some negative assets? And then other considerations start coming into play. It's like, even if the actuaries were comfortable sort of paying that down, would you be comfortable as a company, not having any sort of tangible assets? Liquidity considerations, dividend cover all become, sort of considerations and factors. And the fact is, all of those considerations were already in APN 107 previously. There was a requirement to consider these things, but because the liability and capital framework tended to be, relatively prudent, and that sort of tended to dominate the situation, I don't think most people really sort of went through that sort of exercise of considering other constraints on your required capital. And the purpose of the standard now is actually really sort of bringing that point out, because it's much more likely to occur for companies now. So in this particular example, again, I've sort of considered, this company, this might be their SAM sort of basis, but then their IFRS current reporting sort of basis, they might choose to have best estimate liabilities and then top up or zero-wise those negatives up to sort of zero. And there you can sort of see, and then in addition, have other sort of internal objectives around, minimum levels of liquidity and dividends of cover. So for a company like this, it needs to actually consider both the regulatory framework, but also its IFRS framework in working out what is the true amount of required capital that is being subtracted. And that's really at the heart of what the standard is requiring. So now I'll sort of move on to the panel to lob them some sort of questions. And maybe just to sort of start off with Sukhet, what do you see as being the likely sort of frameworks? Obviously you've got a whole range of sort of options that companies can sort of take. Do you see certain frameworks as being more likely than others to come out? And what are the pros and cons of some of those different frameworks?
That's an interesting question. I think it, my view is it depends on the type of organization. So, of course, it's something that came out in my presentation as well as the issue of contract boundaries. So businesses with lots of short contract boundaries, zero contract boundary business, where the SAM basis would would actually place no value upon the business would obviously that would be a con, and would most likely look at something more like an IFRS basis. Similarly, another advantage of IFRS is that it's also consistently applied within South Africa and internationally. So we have subsidiaries outside of South Africa that might actually not be on a SAM basis. That is a consideration as well, especially when you want to report consolidated results. However, I think for some other organisations that are maybe only writing in, you know, long contract boundary risk business, the SAM basis might actually be something that has a number of advantages. They don't have the issues around sort of the business with no value being placed on it, and might use a SAM basis or adjusted SAM basis. In terms of IFRS 17 and what that impact is, we can probably cover it later. But I mean that whether we'll still be able to use IFRS 17 depends on where the standard lands and interpretations land.
Okay, and Rion, I mean, from a practitioner's sort of perspective?
Yes, I think I agree with, all Gert's observations. I think another way to think of a constraint is really to almost consider a distributable cash flow type of model. So, I mean, that I think almost captures your capital requirements, it captures your liability basis, but also brings in for real liquidity type of considerations to consider what and when do you expect your cash flows to be available to distribute to shareholders. So that's a basis that I think might be likely. Also, another approach might be to consider what's happened in the EU and the UK. Solvency II has been implemented at the beginning of 2016. So we've had really a 2.5 years head start compared to the introduction of SAM. And I think what we've seen there is a lot of the large insurers have stopped reporting on MCEV basis altogether. So roughly half of the largest European insurers have stopped pure MCEV reporting. I mean, they've adopted various other methods. For example, some of them only report on a MCV type of basis for new business, but in general there's a fairly strong alignment moving towards Solvency II as the liability basis. So it remains to be seen if that's a similar trend that could spill over here. I think it's unlikely that we will see a large spread discontinuation of EV reporting in the near future, but that remains to be seen.
Yeah. Okay. So with the freedom to sort of consider different sort of bases, you know, depending on the nature of the company, obviously that reduces the consistency and potential comparability of reporting. So Musa, you know, from your perspective, what do you think of some of these developments?
Before I touch on that, just an additional point on what what Rian was saying is what we've seen is that so just to give a more color on what the investor base or the analyst base looks like in South Africa, you have I would say about all of the clients we service, maybe about 30%, maybe 40 at best, being actuaries. So they are more technical, they sort of scrutinize EV and so on. Now, in the international side, I think it's more so now touching on what's happening in Europe, EV doesn't seem to be as important a metric. So no one values the company using, for example, price to EV and so on. It's more price to earnings. Now, in that regard, that's why I think a market like the European one would be more ready to sort of dispel with the use of EV. But now then touching on the point about consistency. There, I think you have to maybe understand what we use EV for. It's mainly for two purposes. One is sort of to appraise the company, right? But the other is also to sort of I know we'll touch on IFRS 17 later, but there's generally a wide sort of difference in how the different companies disclose their earnings. So to sort of get a more consistent way of comparing the companies, we would look at, for example, the NAV, the adjusted net worth column of the EV, because that gives a comparable, we know that, you know, what we call statutory earnings. Now, that's really where the need for consistency comes in, is that we need to have some sort of basis for comparing across the companies, and also in principle comparing the valuations, right? So if we look at the EV for one company, what markdowns do we have to make for some of these sort of technical choices to get to a more comparable? So in the ideal world, you would have the same base, so we don't have to sort of have the headache of having to adjust for these things, especially considering the fact that the analyst community is not made of actuaries, right? So I think it's really the need for as much consistency across the South African market and over time as well.
Yeah. So maybe just continuing on the consistency, but also sort of linking it to the comments. I don't know if you heard Rian there saying he's sort of expecting probably, you know, not too much sort of change from existing sort of EV sort of approaches. Vivek, I mean, from your perspective, just commenting on Rian's sort of comment, are you expecting to sort of see fundamental sort of change in approaches across the market?
So from my perspective, I don't see massive change. And just coming on Musa's point, I mean, the investment community is not full of actually. So even the executive teams themselves have got accountants and non-actuaries on those teams. And so seeing a major change in basis and a major change of reflection of EV, there's no appetite for that, especially with the change from SAM, IFRS 17 coming in 3 years from now. So I see things remaining largely the same, largely simplistic. And again, coming back to the whole theoretical conversation, economic value is not going to change. And so to go to a lot of effort of changing your liability basis and capital basis just for disclosure requirements doesn't make sense to me.
So I mean, you're talking about the effort, you know, sort of part of the equation, and sort of thinking, you know, sort of cost benefit of any sort of changes. So Rian, maybe on practicalities sort of side of things, you know, if you know, how much work or sort of effort do we think there might be if you make wholesale sort of changes? And even if you aren't fundamentally, you know, sort of changing the framework, you know, just, you know, adding those additional layers of consideration of other dimensions, other sort of constraints, you know, might that be a material amount of extra work?
Yes, from a practical point of view, again, it depends probably from organization to organization and how much changes are really involved moving from the current basis to a new basis. But I think there could be a number of quite material practical just considerations and complexities in the short term to move to the basis. I mean, I'll give you a couple of examples maybe. So your new business reporting, I mean, that's been also flagged in the European reporting as one of the challenges. So your capital allocation becomes one of your key assumptions. How do you allocate capital to existing compared to new business? It could be proportional compared to on an incremental basis, which could give you different results. Also, some of the things that that we have encountered is in the approach to do your analysis of change in embedded value from one period to the next. I think that becomes computationally quite challenging potentially. I mean, if it involves a lot of step runs, those step runs now become a lot more complex compared to what they used to be. You have to take your change in your capital and your cost of capital into account in each one of your step runs. So again, the capital allocation becomes a key assumption on how you allocate changes in capital between different runs and different blocks of business. Consideration to the adjustment for intangibles. I think we've mentioned that in some of the considerations before. So negative reserves, for example, how do you take that into cash flow and how does that impact your distributable cash flows and your liquidity requirements? another potential key consideration, and also specifically for South Africa, is a potential change in the tax basis. Again, it's different for different companies, but your SAM basis may not necessarily align with your tax basis depending on your business and your mix of business. So it becomes a question of how to adjust for it and the materiality thereof. So we've experienced some of these changes when we moved for our UK life business, that moved to a Solvency II reporting about 2.5 years ago. And I mean, these were quite material considerations to think through.
Right. Okay. I mean, so continuing on, you know, sort of some of the considerations, you know, that of different sort of frameworks. You know, so I think we've largely sort of looked at, looking at a SAM. Or like, sticking with an IFRS sort of type as a framework. Implicit in that, that IFRS sort of approach is that it happens to be the same as your current EV, or in other words, the same as your current SVM basis. But that's not always the case. So, Gert, what does that potentially sort of mean? For a company which is currently has sort of different bases there. Do we sort of create something separate to address that? And what's what sort of rationale do we have for that?
It's quite a difficult question to answer. I think it depends on the organisation. So the fact is you're presenting an alternative balance sheet and income statement to the users of the accounts, and it will be important, in my view. I think a key requirement is to enable users of the accounts to navigate between your EV results and your IFRS results and your SAM results. So there might be, I think, some organizations that might decide to adjust for some of those differences, but ultimately I think it depends also on how you manage the business. So if management actually believes in the way that they're currently doing things, and that's the way that they're managing the business, I think you'll get pushback. But if we can if you can produce results that are used in decision making, that will also play through in the decision.
Right, okay. Yeah, so I mean, Vivek, I think that sort of aligns with the comment you were making a bit sort of earlier about the use, of this reporting from a management perspective. I mean, do you think, from a CFO sort of perspective, do you think there's a particular sort of preference, for one of these sort of frameworks, you're sticking to an SVM, sort of kind of approach, or IFRS, or SAM as a perspective?
So, Peter, I'm going to give you the diplomatic answer, which is it depends.
Yeah.
I think that the insurance companies are quite different, and I think if you've got a product, if you've got an insurance company that's heavily risk focused, then the way you actually look at the liability and capital framework is quite different from an organization that's got lots of savings business. If you've got a large insurer that's got a mixture of both, then you've got almost like an internal rebellion between, actually, we like this part, and the other guy like this one. Which one do you do that actually captures both?
Yeah.
And you actually might end up with a metric that makes both happy, but not completely happy. And you're going to have deficiencies.
Yeah.
And again, when you get to a bank insurer, for example, where it's heavily risk business, then it's a lot more seamless, a lot more homogenous in terms of how you teach your capital framework and your IFRS framework.
Right. Okay. So
then obviously, and the last point is, I mean, with IFRS 17 coming, we're going to labor this point over and over again today, is you're going to have to consider what happens between now and IFRS 17 in 2021, and the need to make other minor changes to be seamless and consistent with that, or do you actually, for example, accelerate that piece of work now? I think that's a big question.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there's a lot of appetite to accelerate IFRS 17. But you do talk to a couple of points there, the potential inconsistency or sort of gaps in EV, where it sort of doesn't cover certain parts of the business. Gert, I know you guys have done a lot of work sort of, adding to the standard. But Musa, as a user of e-visa reporting, do you still feel that there are significant sort of gaps in the standard, or you know, that reduces the usability, or you know, of embedded value reporting?
So I guess there are some sort of gaps, right? I would say, but it's not specifically related to the new changes around SAM. In terms of the new changes, what we think is that it gives some flexibility to the insurer, and that's always it's not welcome by the market, because it creates inconsistencies over time and across insurers, and that's the point. But speaking to I did get a sense from the different companies what their thinking is, and it seems as though they're targeting to not have a major sort of step change in the transition. So, and then that's welcome, right? In terms of whether there are other gaps, right? And that's where, so I think, we were having a debate earlier about it, whether the standard needs to now think about having EV for non-covered businesses, right? Which is, I think, a completely different discussion. But I think the point still needs to be made that when we as the market and other investors as well look at EV, the immediate thing that comes to mind is that it's an actuarial concept. It's an actuary that did the calculation. But the point is that there's no standard prescribing that calculation, and that creates a lot of, looking at the market at the moment, there's a huge spread between how company A versus company B thinks about non-covered EV valuation, and that creates a huge sort of So the point is that if we are to think about EV as a final product that the market is able to use to make a decision, by not having a sort of a prescription around some of these things, you are now passing the buck back to the analysts. Yeah. And that sort of distorts the entire purpose, because they now have to now think about it. But anyway, that's probably outside of the...
Yeah. So Gert, care to respond? Is this something that we're going to sort of add to the work list for future updates?
It's probably something that we'll take up with the LAC. I mean, up till now we've really just focused on the covered business component, but I do sense that Musa's making a very, very important point that as a profession, people are looking at the results and they're thinking actuaries. But they all, we don't have a standard for valuing non-covered business, and you know, it might be something that we need to consider as a profession.
Okay. Great. Perfect.
Yeah, I want to just jump in on Musa's comment. So the new APN is more liberal, if you want to call it. It gives you more flexibility, gives you more choice, but you've got to put more information in your disclosures. That can't be a bad thing. I mean, you're saying, listen, you don't trust management, they're going to be more liberal with the disclosures, and you can't get comparability, for example. But if you're allowed more liberal APN, management can more appropriately capture economic value, and that should make your job easier in terms of comparability or sort of getting value.
Yes, I mean, it's a fair point, but I guess there's a certain amount of skepticism, as with, I think, any investor, right? And I think that's the challenge. As long as it's managed in a consistent fashion and there are no sort of massive changes, and that's what the sense we are getting from the different companies is. So to the extent that that's true, then there's no, I think there would be no pushback from anyone.
Okay, great. I do want to make sure we've got some time to cover the IFRS 17, but I mean, in summary, you know, for the SAM related sort of things, I think the general message is, EV is still, you know, fulfilling a useful purpose. It may have some gaps, which we may sort of look at some closing, and then also we're probably not expecting, you know, sort of too much of a fundamental sort of change across the market, although that awaits to be seen. If we've got time, we can also get back to the question of why that might be different to other jurisdictions. So, you know, just on the IFRS 17, just a quick sort of reminder, from the original sort of slide, on your current sort of basis, you've got best estimates, some margins, and some required sort of capital. There is sort of a view, you know, under an IFRS 17, you've got a similar best estimate, may or may not be the same, but, you know, probably not a million miles apart. Got some margin sitting in there, and then specifically the CSM, which is meant to sort of capture the remaining sort of profit on business, which is released over the time. So there is potentially a view out there that, oh, well, isn't the CSM your new VIF? Does that actually sort of capture, what embedded value reporting attempts to capture? So, Kurt, you're looking at me. I don't know, do you have any particular sort of views on that?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of issues with the current CSM. I think it is it's a similar concept. There are some issues around sort of the use of locked-in rates, not allowing for all expenses, but those, I think, are challenges that you can overcome. But ultimately, it only works for insurance contracts. You still sit with the issue around investment contracts. But that aside, it also doesn't allow for company tax or transfer tax. So best case scenario, you might end up having a sort of a light EV calculation on top of your IFRS 17 results with some adjustments. There are a number of other areas that might result in some issues, or for example, reinsurance in the way that certain interpretations of the standard actually requires you to allow for future new business on a reinsurance to treaties and how to match that back to your direct liabilities. So it's measuring the same thing. It leaves out some components, like the tax, for example, but there might be an opportunity to cut back on some of the calculations.
Okay, Rian, Gert's given a reasonably sort of comprehensive list of some of the gaps. I don't know, are there any others out there? And, what's your view of the likelihood? Are you expecting to continue to fundamentally produce embedded values of calculations?
Yes, my expectation would be that I think most companies will continue in South African context at least with the embedded value calculations. I think maybe to add to the IFRS 17 point, another point to make is that the IFRS 17 is a measurement standard. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't fundamentally change your cash flow profile of a business. So again, it comes back to the point, it depends on your business and the business mix within each different company. If you were to target a distributable cash flow type of approach to EV, then IFRS 17 shouldn't impact that at all, ignoring potential knock-on impacts in terms of taxation change in basis. So I think there are two different purposes between SAM, which is a directly impact your cash flow profile and your required capital, whereas IFRS 17 is purely a measurement standard. So if IFRS 17 is significantly different to your cash flow profile, I don't expect that would form the basis of your EV necessarily. I think the distributable cash flow model might be more appropriate in that way.
Right. Okay. Vivek, from your perspective, we heard all the good things from the actuaries as to why EVs, or what are the flaws with IFRS 17 from an EV perspective. From the other sort of side, in terms of users of the information, to what extent do you think there's a waiting to still rely on IFRS, both the existing sort of IFRS, and hence what is the potential sort of increase in appetite to use IFRS going forward?
So, Pete, yeah, there's a couple of questions in there, but I think the current IFRS, I think it's well embedded in organization. People talk about profits. Management understand, staff understand, many stakeholders understand profits. You'll see a headline saying company profits down 10%. You're not going to see a headline saying EVs dropped 10%. So from an emotional perspective outside the insurance industry, IFRS earnings is very, very embedded in the organization. Coming to IFRS 17, I think Harold and Rian picked up a couple of points. It was initially going to be that silver bullet. I mean, some of the big issues you've already raised makes it sort of like a rusted bullet now. it almost makes EV more applicable and more valuable. As much as we have deficiencies in EV, IFRS 17 is already showing some big holes in it. And when we get to IFRS 17, we might find some additional holes, some of the practicalities in it. So coming back to the question about, is IFRS here to stay? For sure. you know, in its current form. Is EV going to stay in its current form? Maybe not exactly in its current form, but definitely some sort of very similar form, you know, an adjusted EV. But I think the framework and the new APN 1.7, I think it's going to be very relevant going forward. You know, I think the buzzword is economic value and the extent to what economic value captures it, and I think that largely it captures it at the moment. Yeah. Musa, your take.
Yeah, so in terms of how we see it is from... So we think EV will continue to be invaluable, right? There are a lot
Sorry,
of...
Sorry, just can you just say that again?
Yeah, so EV will continue to be invaluable, right? There are many... Obviously, there are the points that were raised around the differences in what's covered, but even beyond that, something like VNB, the sensitivity tables that we rely on at the moment, I think those will continue to be necessary, or at least useful. But I think the other point now, looking at whether sort of IFRS 17 will be the silver bullet, I think it already addresses a lot of things. I think it will change a lot. And just to give a sense of that, a few months ago we did a survey with our sort of clients to get a sense of how they view the different companies, and looking at things like how well you rate accounting. So how well do you rely? So when you look at headline earnings, are you confident in that? Are you confident in the EV and so on? And there was a huge, huge difference, right? For some it was exceptionally confident, whereas for others it was very poor, right? Now the way we read that is it says one of two things, right? Because it was a consensus. It wasn't just one odd person saying we don't trust this or we don't have it. So we read it as, you know, it's either the consensus is wrong or it's right. Now if it's wrong, it says something, right? It says that the level of disclosure is weak. In other words, when we look at IFRS earnings as they are now, we cannot get an accurate sense of whether we can trust them, and that's where IFRS 17 comes in. But then the other possibility is also worth considering, that the consensus might be right, and we've seen that in the past as well, and that's where you now need to think about professionalism and what the limitations of APN might be. Because if the market is right to not trust, you know, accounting or EV, then it says something more broadly about the profession. And that's our sense. Then just maybe a final remark is around, having spoken to the different companies, we do get the sense that while both... EV and IFRS will obviously probably go forward, there is a need for consistency, right? As much alignment as possible, and that's another area where I think that the society could look at.
Okay, great. I do want to leave. We've got about 10 minutes still available to cover some questions and answers. So I believe we've got some roving mics out there. Okay. Are there any questions anybody wants to sort of pose to our panel whilst you've got them here? Okay. I'm not seeing too many arms out there. Right. Okay. Got one. Sorry.
I don't think I can let that bombshell that was just dropped go without comment. So I think I heard you say that there's a widespread mistrust of the numbers produced by actuaries from the investor community. That's quite alarming. And if so, what could we do to improve that situation?
So I mean, I wouldn't necessarily use the word mistrust. It's just differences in the level of confidence. And a significant difference, right? But the point here is really which one of the two explanations is the valid one? Is it that there's a credible reason to be concerned, or is it just that there's no, I mean, there's information asymmetry between those who prepare the numbers and those who use them? Now, it's just then a matter of sort of figure. I think it's a bit of both. And that's where I think I have no way of commenting on how to fix that. That's why I'm suggesting, you know, looking at, you know, maybe putting more restrictions. Or I mean, I actually don't have a clear answer on that. But I do think that IFRS 17 already meets some of the gaps in terms of disclosure, because it standardizes, right? When we look at Company A, we know that it's the same earnings as Company B. In terms of EV, that's a more difficult, I think, conversation to have. But I think the point we made earlier around EV for non-covered business is another sort of important thing to think about, right? It's, if there's at least a standard for how to think about that, it would already sort of address some of the concerns.
Peter, I just want to add as well. So I'm almost like challenging Musa. So there's two questions. There's the APM, the changes to it. Are you happy that it captures this? And then there's the, so I must use the word capture, sorry. Anyway, and then there's the, yeah, so the APN hasn't been captured. Anyway, coming back to the important question is implementation of it. So I think if the APN is liberal and it's principles-based, you know, are you happy with that? And then there's the part about implementation of it, because that's when you're going to get the information asymmetry between those that have the information and those that don't have the information. So I think, you know, to answer the question about the skepticism, the word you used earlier, and, well, we saw a stronger word of mistrust, in my opinion, that the new APN is liberal, it's sound, right? Well done to that. And then, but to answer your question, and the question is, how do we solve the latter, which is the implementation of a well-rounded framework?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the APN does cover a lot of the, you know, the basis as it stands. The only gap, as I was saying, is just on the non-covered side. And I think there's probably a limit to the extent to which you can reasonably cover that. But I think at least some guidance on how to think about that might be a good idea. And in terms of the implementation side, it's a very difficult thing to think about. I have no clear answer for that, unfortunately.
So, sorry, maybe do you want more disclosures?
Yeah, look, so I mean, actually, that's a good point, right? So one of the things I mean we were tossing around is whether it makes sense when, instead of just disclosing the EV, disclose also the cash flow profile. I mean, yeah. It's not competitive information, right? Just. Yeah. And that allows us to value the thing and actually test whether the assumptions are reasonable. And it also sort of puts more, what's the word, accountability to those who prepare the numbers. Because we know if the assumptions are reasonable, we know what cash flow to expect in 3 years, yeah. Adjusting for new business and other things, right? So yeah. It might just simply be a matter of better disclosures, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, I wouldn't, I think maybe I mischaracterized the problem. I wouldn't say that it's a widespread mistrust.
Yeah. Okay.
It's just
some concern. It looks like Kurt's itching to jump in.
This is something that we have been grappling on about on the committee. I think there's an important difference between IFRS and SAM reporting, where there are these are, you have to report them, there are certain roles and requirements for actuaries set out in the legislation or within companies' governance structures. EV is a little different. EV is not a requirement. It's a voluntary disclosure by companies. And to what extent the actuary has the ability to influence something that management really are asking and decided to disclose is something that's difficult it's a difficult issue to sort out in terms of the profession's role. I think definitely looking at potentially, you know, the non-covered business and getting more consistency, but again, that's something that I think should come from the industry. It should be an industry sort of agreement that would drive more trust and more, you know, comparability to between.
It becomes a bit difficult, sort of justifying, explaining why actuaries are opining on how to value, you know, certain other companies. Just so conscious of the, there's a question out there.
So can you hear me?
Yeah.
I just want to make a statement and maybe just get a comment on it. The purpose of EV, I understand a lot of it will be for management to manage the business. And it's been taken sometimes in a different context, used by the markets to value companies. Let me just get a comment on that and just see how that makes it difficult to come to some sort of consistent basis between companies.
I guess, in my understanding, the role of EV is both, right? It's for management, you know, oversight and sort of monitoring shareholder value creation. But at the same time, so if that wasn't the purpose, there would be no use to disclose it, and there would probably be not much oversight from the actuarial society, as because it's an internal MIS tool, right? So the point that the fact that you sort of present that number to the market is sort of creating the expectation, right, that this is a credible number to be used to base investment decision on, right? That's whether it was the initial intention or not, it almost doesn't matter because that's what it's being used for, right? That's my sense. I don't know if other.
Yeah, maybe to add to that, I think part of the main purpose potentially of the EV is the supplementary information that goes with it. It's really the explanation of what happened in a reporting period from the start to the end of a period, and I think a lot of the variances in terms of what goes with that gives a lot of information what's happening in the business, and that's the basis of a lot of discussions between companies and in the investment communities. I think it's also dangerous only to focus on one number. It's well packaged in terms of all the information that goes with it, which has to be viewed together, and that's very valuable.
And maybe just one more point on that is that of all of the sectors in the market, insurance is the most sort of complex, right? If you look at a retail company, it's fairly simple to sort of do a valuation of that. You just look at sales and so on. But with insurance, you have no, I mean, if you look at the liability number, it tells you pretty little about, even for a bank, right? If you look at the gross advances, you can actually work out the NIMs and then various things to sort of arrive at a valuation. With insurance, you can't really do that. And that's where EV becomes really, really crucial. Otherwise, the market would be very, very inefficient.
Right. Just one more point.
Okay,
neither management
one.
Nor analyst will use only embedded value for making decisions. So it's one metric out of a couple of other metrics.
Yes, yeah, so multiple lenses that we have available. Okay, I think we're basically sort of out of time, unless there are any last really burning questions. Okay, so I think in sort of conclusion, largely we sort of heard, you know, probably not too much change as sort of expected locally in the market. It's an interesting sort of thought that that's actually slightly different to what we've seen in other sort of markets. And then also, you know, despite the advancements of IFRS 17, an expectation generally that certainly components, if not all of the embedded value reporting, we expect to sort of live on. With that, I'd just like to really sort of thank all of our panel members for their contribution and time. Thank you very much.